The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It is Friday, the 25th of April, 2025. And we have a busy show as always coming up for you. Our Friday panel will be joining us in a moment. I'll introduce them to you. A little later on, we have That's Entertainment and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation throughout, of course. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call to an 07491 25000 or comments at highlandradio.com. Don't forget, you can watch the show if you're at home or work from home on your TV, via your smart TV, via YouTube or your Fire Stick, and we're across Facebook, X, and on our website. Just click Watch Live. Right, let's say good morning to our panel, Councillor Dennis McGee of the 100% Redress Party. How are you, Dennis?
Very good, Greg. You're very good.
India Kennedy, campaigns and events director with Ogra Fianna Fáil. A recent elevation for you within that organisation, India, I understand.
That's right, Greg. Yeah, I was elected on Saturday, the 12th of April, down in Athlone at our National Youth Conference. So it's been a busy couple of weeks, but I'm really enjoying the role.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, we might tease that out a little later on. Paddy Rooney is the PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Hi, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Always good to have you on the show as well. Pope Francis, who died on Monday at the age of 88, will be laid to rest tomorrow in Rome. His funeral is expected to draw dignitaries from across the world, as well as tens of thousands of faithful. The starting gun has been fired in what many see as a battle for the soul of the church, pitting those who want to continue his progressive reforms against a small but powerful group who want to reverse them. Now, I don't know everyone's religion or interest in religion, but I can ask the question most generally. I'll start with you, Paddy. Have you any preference on the direction of the church? Should the world have a preference?
To the direction that the Catholic Church takes?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose The beliefs and the directions of the Catholic Church, I suppose, are the beliefs and directions of the Catholic Church. I mean, really, I'm not a theologian or anything like that, Greg, but I mean, I don't think it's the business of different religious groups and different faiths and all that to change their beliefs and their approaches because of the changes in the mores and the way that people are thinking throughout the world. I mean, either religious beliefs are real or they're not. You know, political parties can change their beliefs and so on. But the main thing anyway, I suppose, about faith and their different gods and how religions we arrived at. I mean, if the Catholic Church was to, I'm not advocating this, by the way, but if they were to take an approach, would say, for instance, that women could become priests and bishops, and that priests don't have to be celibate anymore. Well, what did that say for the last 2,000 years of the Catholic Church? I mean, is this just a fad then that they're trying to normalise themselves to get real with the people or to even get engaged with the people? I don't know. It seems a bit false if they have to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, there are a smaller but certainly a very active movement within the Catholic Church that doesn't mind if it is smaller, but stick to its guns, return to its more conservative values. And if you want to be part of that club, be part of that club. If you don't, well, don't, rather than trying to chase membership almost.
Oh, absolutely, because there's one cardinal at the moment, Timothy Dolan, is it from, is he from Boston? He's one of the main cities up in the Northeast in the United States, and he's actually come out and been very critical of the direction that Pope Francis took the church, and he wants things to sort of go back a bit and to be more aligned with the teaching and the direction and the sayings, for instance, of Pope John Paul II. But there's no consensus at all, Greg, that the Catholic Church should be moving to the left. If anything, the people that are more vocal at the moment wanted to push it to the right and to be more conservative, actually.
Mm. But can a modern church survive if it, say, for instance, hardens its views on gay relationships or gay marriage, for that matter, in this day and age when, you know, gay relationships are a part of everyday life, every person probably with any faith at all is either that person or knows someone. And, you know, are there certain sort of things that you do have to say, well, you know, this is reflective of society?
Well, I'm not sure it's right to say, Greg, that, you know, you use the word that they're hardening their views. All they're being is that they're consistent with their views that they were articulating over the last 2,000 years. Just because governments right across the world change the law about what's lawful and what's acceptable doesn't mean then that people who have their faith about a certain thing. I'm not advocating this, by the way.
No, I get that.
I think that people that are gay and lesbian and that are non-heterosexual or whatever have a modern place in society. Absolutely, I totally agree with that. But the church doesn't have to necessarily. In fact, I'm not sure of any church, whether we're talking about the different ranges of Protestant churches or the Muslim church or the Jewish faith. I mean, have any of them ever changed their position in relation to social issues such as this? Mm. Not sure they have, you know.
India, I don't know if this is something you've a great deal of interest in, the direction of the church going forward. You know, as I say, regardless of religion, it does have an impact on, it can have an impact sort of on wider society and the conversations that are had within. What's your view?
Well, I actually, like, I am a Catholic. I go to Mass every Wednesday in college. I don't believe in absolutely everything that the Catholic Church believes in, but I am very proud of my faith. And I think that there's certain trends in society that if you were to change the Catholic Church every time a trend popped up, they'd never stop changing it, as Patrick said. But I think that the likes of gay marriage, I think that's something that that our society voted on and that many countries around the world voted on. And I think there's nothing in the Bible that says it has to be a man and a woman that get married. If two people love each other, whether they're two men, two women, two non-binary people, they deserve to be married, and they deserve to be married in the church that they've been baptized, confirmed and had communion in. So that's just my view on it. But I think that Pope Francis, although he had his faults like every other person in the world, he was a very modern Pope in the sense that he reached out to the people that were always forgotten in the last couple of popes.
Yeah, don't look at me for help on that one.
I think that everybody was very sad at his death because of how he treated those that always were silenced. He gave a voice to those that were silenced in all walks of life and in all communities, rich or poor. And I think that the next Pope has to continue that legacy on.
Yeah, okay. Dennis McGee, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I like Pope Francis. You know, I'm a Catholic. I liked his way. You know, he always came across as a very caring Pope. You know, always reaching out, even to the last minute before, was it last Sunday? Like, you know, you knew that the man was severely ill, but he still wanted to be out through the people, like, you know. So I think that sent a, you know, resonated with a lot of people, like, you know, that this guy wants to be with the ordinary folk, even though, you know, we know about the Catholic Church and the money they have and everything else. But I thought that this Pope was different, you know, and I hope it continues in that vein, like, you know. So I hope the next Pope continues to be, like, moderate and reaching out to the people and trying to go, you know, with the ordinary people, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll stay with religion, if that's okay, because primary school teachers suggest that...
Can I just make one point? Sorry, before you go on there. I mean, Dennis made a nice comment there about the Pope wants to be with the ordinary people. But former President Mary McAleese had a good opinion piece in the Irish Times there a couple of days ago, if you saw it. And she was actually very, very critical of him, because she made the point that he was articulating all these things about gay marriage and the role of non-heterosexual, or the acceptance of non-heterosexual people, and issues, you know, like about women in the church and also about accountability for clerical abuse. But he'd never actually done anything about it. He was a talker. He wasn't a walker. Mm. He might have expressed all those sentiments. I mean, he was in a very powerful position in the Catholic Church for the last 13 years. And if he can't exercise any kind of meaningful power over that period of time, well, God help the rest of us.
Yeah, right? But I mean, I think a lot of those issues that you made, your points you've made, or even conversations Mary McAleese might have been referencing to, I think generally governments, we've seen massive changes, for an example, in the Supreme Court Supreme Court ruling in Britain last week, for an example. There's lots of stuff the world hasn't settled on yet, you know, in terms of the direction we go, you know, what various people's roles in society might be.
That's true. But, I mean, he can only settle on the things that he can settle on. I mean, the change in legislation and governments around the country is one thing. But this particular, the Pope at any particular time is the leader of the Catholic Church in the world. And the direction of that, whether people agree with it or not, you know, he's a huge influence, even if it's incremental change over a period of time. I mean, he was 13 years in power, if you want to call it that, as a pope. But what's meaningful difference now in relation to practicality, whatever about his beliefs were and whatever kind of views he was articulating? But from a practical point of view, what has changed in the last 13
years? Is it not about a sense, though, and you know, morality, in a sense that, you know, you might have gay people who felt more welcome in that church? There didn't necessarily have to be a diktat to say that you can do this, you can do that, you can do the other. But their faith perhaps felt more validated when the head of the church, you know, so in terms of...
Oh, well, that's for sure, yeah.
So in terms of the actual impact, in terms of written down laws, what changed? But I would say there were people, gay people who, you know, went to church if they chose to, that felt like it was their church as well. So that's quite a significant contribution.
Yeah, because without a doubt, you're quite right in that, Greg. I mean, the church is a much warmer place in theory anyway, whatever in practice now for non-heterosexual people than it would be, for instance, in John Paul II's time, without a question.
Okay, let's take a quick break and I will come back with, because, you know, you could say the seeds of any of our opinions are we're not born with them necessarily. They're planted or developed, and a lot of that might happen in our formative years in school. And there's been quite a bit of talk at the INTO's conference down in Galway about religion in schools. We'll have a quick chat about that because there's so much more to get through after we take a break. We're in the company of Councillor Dennis McGee, India Kennedy, involved heavily with Old Grafina Fall, of course, and Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Greg, priests were not always celibate. They used to be able to marry, so a lot of the current rules are man-made anyway and nothing to do with faith. And another Greg, the church will always survive, even if it shrinks in numbers or loses buildings. The church is the faith of the people and the priesthood, and no one questioning its future, I suppose. Primary school teachers this week suggest that religion be limited in schools, a large majority of them indicating faith formation, including preparation for sacrament, should take place outside of the school. The INTO General Secretary, John Boyle, Donegal Man, this week said primary school teachers want a school system that's inclusive, equitable and reflective of the diversity of the pupils. Mr. Boyle made the comments at the end of a motion debating the role of the Catholic Church in schools in Galway. So should religion play less of a role in schools? Should Christian teachings be removed to accommodate maybe a changing population? Indy, I'll start with you on this one, if that's all right.
I think it all depends on what school you send your kids to. It's very difficult these days because they're so hard to get a place for children, especially in rural areas like Donegal. But I mean, a survey was done at the INTO members, and only 4% believe that primary schools should prepare children for sacraments like communion and confirmation. And they talk about how teachers feel that faith should be with the responsibilities of parents and families and parishes, not the school. But again, it is up to the parents, because if you're going to say, right, we're going to take the communion out of the classroom and you have to teach your kids, you have to take them to a class every week, it's very difficult for parents because they're under enough pressure as it is. But then you have to look at it from a point of view of the classroom, that not every single child is going to make their communion. Not every child in that classroom is Catholic. So you have to find a balance between making sure that no child is left out and making sure that no parent is left under pressure, because
important. We are predominantly a Christian country at the moment, and you know, lots of people have come into this country and make a fantastic contribution on a daily basis. There's a separate conversation about immigration, but sometimes I think we shouldn't forget that we have a diverse population for ages and ages, and second and third generation people living in this country. But At the same time, it is primarily, predominantly still a Christian country, whether it's practiced or not. Should we be bending to not leave children out. So say, for instance, a child has a Muslim background, the majority taught Catholicism in the school, and it would be the role of the Muslim family perhaps to teach their child their religion outside of school. But at the same time, maybe that child is learning a little bit more about the country that they're now living in and being raised in, if you know what I mean. We want to make sure we get it right if we're going to be changing anything, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's good to have a mix of all religions, because when we were in school, we were taught by a Catholic teacher. And even at secondary school, we didn't learn about any other religion but Catholicism. And my background, my Nana was Buddhist. So it's important to learn about other cultures. But if you're a Catholic, if you come from a Catholic family, if you want to practice the Catholic faith yourself, you should be able to do it in a school, especially if that school is a predominantly Catholic school. If it's a non-denominational school, it's very difficult because it's people have sent their children to that school.
That's a choice, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is a big demand on that as well, which is
definitely.
Perhaps maybe we found the solution to a lot of this. Dennis McGee, what's your view, councillor?
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, because I think, you know, there's a little bit of... you know, the teachers are overloaded, like, you know, with work and stuff in the classes, like, you know, and they probably feel we have to be cognizant of the fact that they probably feel that they're overloaded, like, you know. But my firm belief is, like, you know, that, you know, the religion of this country should be number one, like, you know. I mean, we are a Christian country, like, we're predominantly a Catholic country. And I think, you know, whatever about other nationalities coming in, I don't see, you know, if we went to any other part of the world, like, you know, that, you know, they wouldn't change it to accommodate us, like, you know. So it's we have to make sure that we stick to our own values and morals and you know, stay true to ourselves, like.
Do you think Ireland is unique in that, you know, I think sometimes we feel that if we celebrate our culture or our flag or our religion, in inverted commas with religion, right, because it's a broad church, no pun intended, that we are sometimes ashamed of it. Like, you can do that and not offend others. You know, as you mentioned, lots of other countries, they wouldn't perhaps dream of sort of trying to water down, you know, Irishness, in inverted commas, to accommodate others. And others perhaps don't even expect that. We seem to drive this conversation ourselves.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, you know, and we don't, like, you don't set out to offend any other religion, like, you know. But listen, we're a predominantly Catholic country. Christian, that's the way we were brought up, like, you know. The question, I suppose, you were asking whether teachers can get the kids prepped for the sacraments, you know. So maybe there's a room there for the church to do a little bit as well, like, you know, or outside of school. But I think it's good to get it, because that's where we all learned our values and morals and everything when we were growing up, and it was instilled in us when we were youngsters. Like, so we should never be afraid of putting our own culture, heritage, all that kind of stuff front, like, you know, make no apologies for it, like, you know. Surely accommodate all these other ones that are coming in, if they want to come in, if they want to practice their own religion, yeah, fine, you know. But it shouldn't be to the detriment of our culture or our religion, like. That's my opinion.
Yeah, they should and need to be able to coexist. That's how a society functions best, with mutual respect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Paddy, what's your view?
Well, I suppose the first thing is, at the start of this conversation, we should acknowledge, I suppose, the role and the contribution of the Catholic Church in educating, let's call it the poor Irish, after Daniel O'Connell achieved you know, Catholic emancipation way back in the 1940s, and only for the Catholic Church for, I suppose, 1850 up to 1950, the ordinary everyday Irish people wouldn't have any education at all. They'd be still in the head screen. So I suppose that has to be acknowledged. I suppose for anybody listening to your programme this morning, for instance, in Donegal here, Greg, that's not a Catholic, you know, that they're a member of another religious faith or a member of another religion. And to hear us saying that this is a Catholic country, I remember, I don't know what that means for them about, you know, am I, even though 7 or 8 generations of my own family lived here, am I some kind of an intruder or whatever?
No, that's that is quite literally what I wasn't saying. If I move...
No, I'm not saying you say that.
No, but this is what I think, why we seem to be afraid to have the convo, because we're afraid of upsetting people. If I move to another country and the religion, say I move to Dubai, like thousands and thousands of us do, right? And I'm listening to a radio station that are talking about their religion. I'm not going to feel upset or offended or as if it's a target towards me. I'm living in their country, and I would.
Well, that's fair enough.
I'll come back to you. Do you want to come in there? Sorry.
I just wanted to say it's important to note that not every person that's saying that they don't want to learn about Catholicism is a migrant. There's a lot of families that have grown up here, were brought up here.
Oh, 100%.
Might have been brought up predominantly Catholic, but have decided that their kids are not going to learn about the Catholic religion. And that's up to them and their kids.
Yes, the reason I reference that is because the INTO General Secretary himself said that the school system needs to be inclusive, equitable, and reflective of the diversity of our pupils. Now, that could be diversity in terms of culture, religion, or it could be opinion as well, India. But it was sort of a catch-all. I take your point.
Let's come at this a different way. I think that you know, we are a Catholic country and we're this and that and the other. And that may have, kind of thinking may have fitted in okay with this country for the last 150 years. But I think we moved away from this. I think John Boyle has set off something good here, and it needs a lot of attention and a lot of discussion, actually, because we know, for instance, in Northern Ireland that the people, they don't live together, they don't educate together, they don't play together, and they don't even know each other. I've met people, particularly from the unionist divide through work and stuff like that, and they know, at the time anyway, there was a time when they knew absolutely zero about the Republic of Ireland. And I think if we move into a situation in this country now, because the ESRI says the population of this country is going to double in whatever number of years, I don't know, 40 years or whatever it is. And a fair proportion of those are going to be probably non-Catholic. And I think this says something about the future cohesion of the state. It's actually bigger than, you know, children going to particular schools. Because if we have Catholics being taught in a Catholic school, non-Catholic Christians in their schools, Jewish children in their schools, Muslim children in their schools, does that not, and I think that we're sowing the seeds for some kind of dangerous division here and polarisation when that generation then in 30 years' time become adult, get into adulthood themselves, and they become legislators themselves. And I think God knows what direction this is going to take. There is in economics, there is a law called the law of unintended consequences, and it actually might be a very, very good thing for the Catholic Church if the preparation for the sacraments was taken out of the primary schools, and that people had to make a concerted effort, the same as children in other Christian non-Catholic churches in this country. I know India said about parents have enough to do and they don't have time to be taking children here and there, but if they valued the religion enough, they would actually do it. Mm-hmm. And while it might make the Catholic Church marginally smaller in this country, it might make it a heck of a lot stronger than it is at the moment. My wife and I, we don't have any grandchildren, but a lot of our peer group have. And it's very evident now, their children are scattered all over the country. It's very evident, it keeps coming up in conversations all the time, that a lot of people are getting their children baptised, and because for the simple reason that it gets them access to a local school. And they're going through all the pageantry that's involved in education and so on and so forth in the church, because it allows them to get into a stream in education. If you don't have a baptismal cert, try and get yourself into a primary school in this country, whether you value that baptismal cert or otherwise. And it just takes that seems very shallow to me. You either believe in your faith or you don't. If you believe in your faith, you're going to go
Dennis, what do you
think? To practice and to pass it on to your children.
What's your views on that? Because it seems to be somewhat at odds to your view of the role of church and school.
Listen, my view is very simple. You know, I have no problem with other kids coming to this country and as somebody said, like, you know, there could be Irish kids not wanting to bring their kids up as within the Catholic faith. My point is, like, you know, from when I was brought up, Catholic faith was very strong in our community and still is. Like. Mm. So I don't know where this story is coming from that, you know, we're not as Catholic as we were and people get want to get baptised just because they want to send their kids to school. That might be relevant maybe around cities or somewhere, but around rural Ireland where I come, I think the faith is very strong and I'd be very much of the view of trying to keep it like that.
Yeah. And finally, India, just on your view, let's just say that this actually was a conversation that was being driven solely by people that just are of no faith, for an example. Mm-hmm. The majority rule, though, would the majority of people who identify as Catholic or Christian in this country would have to make these sacrifices to appeal and to be inclusive to that group of people. You know, should the majority, if the CSO is correct in their census, should the majority have to sort of change so much to accommodate the few?
No, I don't think so. I think that if the majority of the people, whether they've been born here or whether they're, you know, raising their children in Ireland, I think that's a regardless. I think if predominantly the majority of people in Ireland are Catholic, I think that we should raise our kids in a Catholic society, but we should teach them to be inclusive of other societies, teach them other religions, because just because you're born into a Catholic household doesn't mean you might necessarily want to raise yourself mm-hmm. or raise your children as a Catholic household. And I think that's something that needs to be, we need to look at the survey and say, right, who in this survey is Catholic, who decided to walk away from their Catholic faith, who is raising their kids in a different faith, who's raising their kids as atheists. But I think that if you're sending your child to a Catholic school, you have to be open yeah. to the fact that they are going to make the sacraments, they're going to be taught the sacraments in their classroom. And if that doesn't suit you, well, accommodation should be made for children to say, okay, we're learning about the communion. You can either step out or you can sit over there and read a book. Like it's always been done. We went to a Catholic primary school and any children that wasn't making their communion was always invited there in the day, was allowed to stand up with the kids, just didn't wear a communion dress mm-hmm. and didn't practice the sacrament of communion or confirmation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important to know. We are a changing society. We are an evolving society. But if you're dedicated to your faith, if you want to raise your kids in the Catholic Church, you should be allowed to do that within a classroom that's supposed to be Catholic.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a really interesting point. It's a whole different conversation, is about learning about other people. It's yeah. so critical and important, and that really should happen in school, because an awful lot of issues we see nowadays is a lack of understanding or a fear or a, you know what I mean, where there needs to be far more understanding in every single direction. Thanks very much indeed. That last voice you heard was that of India Kennedy. We're also in the view in the company of Paddy Rooney, and we also have Councillor Dennis McGee with us. More from our guests after we take a break. Poor Francis May had sympathy and love for all people, but he did not have the power to change the fundamental law of the church. Morning panel, I've no interest in what the church may or may not do under a new pope. Let's talk about how my children cannot get on the property ladder, government missing housing targets and not fixing the crumbling defective concrete block homes, which is ever-present conversations in this hour. We do have to try and mix it up as well, and we do talk of those issues on a daily. Did the highly intelligent teachers not realise they were applying for a job in a Catholic school when they went for the job? Every Easter, there's whinging story from the INTO conference. Well, it is a platform whereby issues within the industry or within the profession are discussed. Christianity is under attack all over Europe. Churches and cathedrals have cages around them to deter arsonists. Several have already been destroyed. It seems like tolerance only applies to some. Yep. Pass the time talking about nothing. No Catholicism taught in Muslim schools, but we have to teach about Islam and Catholic schools. And that kind of I don't know what's taught in Muslim schools, but sometimes those things are chucked out as if they're absolute facts. I don't know. Maybe they are. Russian's foreign minister has told US media talks are moving in the right direction and spoke optimistically about Donald Trump. The future of Crimea, though, is now at the centre of President Trump's peace plan and has prompted Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky to rule out recognising Russian control of the peninsula. It was annexed, of course, in 2014. Is giving up territory to Russia a price worth paying? 5,000 predominantly young men killed every single week. Or could that leave Europe at threat from Putin if he feels that he can go in and take whatever he likes, stick it out for a couple of years, and then it's his? Paddy, I think I'll start with you on this one, if that's all okay. Right. I'm trying to mix it around.
Can I be very bold here, Greg, and just say one thing as an overhang from the last, and then I'll move on very
quickly? No, it's not. It's perfectly fine. Go ahead.
Right, okay. I think we need to be very careful with our language here about Ireland being a Catholic country, whether it is or not. If Emma Little-Pengelly of the DUP or Mike Nesbitt of the UUP came out later today and said that Northern Ireland was a Protestant state, we would be up in arms about it. It is the function of the state to educate people. It is not the function of the state to teach people a particular faith. It is the role of the faiths to do that. And where that is done is where the issue is here. And I just want to leave it at that.
Yeah, but lots of people have different views on it. And I take your point and I appreciate yours.
Yeah, because remember in the middle of all this, there's many people listening to your program this morning, for instance, that are Christian, not Catholic, in Donegal, and they've lived here. They're not new Irish. They've lived here for the last 8 or 9 generations. And I'm sure they're very bemused as well to find out that they live in a Catholic country. But anyway, let's leave that.
But listen, can I just come in there for 1 second? For me saying that I'm Catholic, somehow you're referring to that we should be apologetic for it. I don't apologise to anybody for saying that I like my Catholic religion. I like going to church. And as far as I'm concerned...
Yeah, that link broke down. It'll come back. Paddy, what I will say, sorry, you broke down. You see, I get where you're coming from, Paddy, but 7 out of 10 people in this country identify as Catholic, right? And to
happy days, Greg.
My point is to talk about that is not with any disrespect or at the expense of another religion, but that 7 out of 10, if we conversations like this don't happen, and say, for instance, Catholicism is taken out of schools or whatever, some might say, well, that figure in the next census could be 4 out of 10.
It is, but does that mean to say if the religion teaching is taken out of schools that it disappears? Come on now.
But that's also to say that this conversation doesn't automatically, elevate Catholics above other religions or it's a means to be offensive towards them, what have you. It's about the sort of,
my final point on this, I'm not going to say anymore. I think that John Boyle needs to be applauded on this because this needs to be the start of a conversation that needs to take place for a very long time. I mean, India, your party leader is doing a very, very good thing at the moment with his all art. He's putting aside €500 million to try and develop relations on this island in totality.
The Shared Island Initiative,
and he had members of the DUP and the Grand Master of the Orange Order down at a function in Dublin Castle recently, and it was an all-island event, not an all-Ireland event.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that need to be distilled here and refocused and all that, so that we can all.
But what do you believe the focus of that? But what do you believe the focus? What do you believe?
One ingredient in the mix, Greg.
Of course. But what do you think the conversation that All Ireland platform is really about? It's about getting Catholics and Protestants to coexist with mutual respect and eventually lead to a united Ireland that recognises is both religions, faiths, and cultures.
Well, you were doing fine there until the piece about ultimately leading to a united Ireland. I mean, that might be 1,000 years away. Remember, it doesn't have to be next year.
But is that not the
people getting on with each other?
Exactly. But now we live in a country whereby the conversation has almost moved on from how Catholics and Protestants live on this island, because we have hundreds of thousands, millions of people who have no faith or of different faiths. Look at the parity between Catholics and Protestants in Northern Ireland is driven to a great extent by those now who say they aren't either Catholic or Protestants or identify as a different religion. So that conversation Micheál Martin has, I think, needs to be reframed to reflect, a very diverse island, not just an island of two religions. I don't know, India, do you have a view on that?
But
we actually...
I know we're taking up time now of some other topic, but if we just leave that part aside here, we're just, you know, talking about people that, about the Northern Ireland Protocol and people in Northern Ireland who want to have nothing got to do with Southern Ireland. They don't want to
trade with us, or they want
the border back or all this kind of stuff. I mean, we're going to have to get inside their heads to try and say we're not the devil incarnate, Greg. That's all I'm saying.
Of course not. Honestly. What were you going to say on India?
I was just going to say that we actually had a youth group up here. I'm in college in Belfast currently, and I took a delegation of youth from O'Grafina Fall up to Belfast. We went to the Shankill Road and we met loyalists there. We sat across from a table from people that openly said that they were in the UDF. And we spoke about our decisions and we spoke about their decisions. We respected them. They respected us. They openly said that they didn't want a united Ireland and we respected that. But I said, and I still believe it, a united Ireland is not putting an Ulster, a unionist flag in Dáil Éireann or an Irish flag across City Hall. It's about two religions, two communities coming together, sitting across from each other and hearing each other's views. And I think that should be across Ireland. Mm-hmm. Like saying someone, the new Irish, that's extremely...
Well, my view, my term.
And I think I know what you're saying. Inclusive to everybody in society.
Exactly, but it's likely that by the time a board poll does come around, it will not actually be Catholics or Protestants that are the deciding factor.
Yeah.
Because that is pretty much split in Northern Ireland, for an example. So it is those who identify as neither of those religions might have the greatest say. So the conversation is going to have to go beyond often where it's at, in my view. And then we haven't even had debates about healthcare and the provision of healthcare and social security.
Can I just say, I like the way that this has turned into, you know, almost a border poll between the four of us here, like, you know, that we're talking about a united Ireland, and that's very welcome. And listen, I would be all for a united Ireland, like, you know, and just being for a united Ireland doesn't mean that, you know, you're not listening to the voice of the other side. Like, of course you are. You know, like, it's a good conversation to have, like, you know. As Indy said there, like, you know, it's all about conversation, compromising, all that kind of stuff, like, you know. I'd hate to think that it'd be 1,000 years away before we get a united Ireland. I'd like to see it definitely in my lifetime. So I think it's very important.
There's lots of people have said that, unfortunately, though it didn't happen in their lifetime. But
well, I'm still here anyway, so
I'm going strong. Good stuff. Stay there. I will take the last the quarter two break now, and that will clear the decks till the end of the show. Stay where you are. Thank you so much. Just finally, we heard that Russia's foreign minister is optimistic that talks are moving in the right direction to establish peace in Ukraine, but Crimea seems to be on the table. It would seem to be that the US is backing Russia's claim to it, and that would form the part of any lasting peace. Zelensky says that's not on the table. It would require constitutional change and a referendum that can't happen during martial law. But is giving up this territory to Russia, which it's had since 2014, Paddy, a price worth paying given the devastating loss of life and destruction that's ongoing?
Well, you see, I suppose war is not about right, it's about might. And this war would have been over long ago, I suppose, only for America and the European element of NATO are back in Ukraine here, because there's a terrible power imbalance in this war here. There isn't consensus within Europe, remember, either, about how this is to proceed here. I mean, countries like Hungary, for sure, Turkey, for sure, don't want NATO to step into the void here. And then there are countries then, of course, like Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Finland in particular, they want this to continue, because Ukraine won't be able to stand up their end of the argument here unless they're getting external help. I mean, we can see from, you know, military ordnance that have been found in Ukraine that Iran, China and India are supplying equipment to Russia. And of course, North Korea are providing them with troops. And I suppose the other thing about this, too, about whatever kind of military backup that Ukraine are getting, we in the world have a very short attention span here, because we've already moved away from Gaza. If you look at the news now, for instance, on the 9 o'clock news, it's getting nowhere near the same degree of attention that it used to get. I mean, Gaza, Greg, is the biggest concentration camp in the world, and it's been literally destroyed. And there's a lot of hunger and disease and the fear of displacement among those people. And Israel are doing that only for two reasons, because they've got the might to do it and they've got the friends to do it. So I think that Ukraine are going to have to look at all of this in the round, because if Donald Trump pulls back America here out of this, the European element of NATO, particularly Germany, the UK and France, are going to have to fill the void here. And if it's a short term thing, it'll be fine. But they need to be very, very careful that they don't, that Ukraine doesn't become their Vietnam, because if it does, they'll, through the fullness of time, then they'll have to put the squeeze on Ukraine, accept the unpalatable.
And this is the issue, you see, even with the might of the countries you mentioned behind them and the absence of the United States, to what end? You know, Ukraine, with the conventional warfare that's ongoing now in modern terms, they can't push Russia out of Ukraine. So can't happen, despite the will.
They can't push them out. But I read somewhere recently that Poland now, for instance, have the largest standing army in Europe, that Poland can actually line up with 1 million soldiers in uniform, armed, if you wanted to see them today, because they're afraid that if anything happened to Ukraine, that they're going to be next. So I think that the unpalatable thing for Ukraine may be, you know, a half a loaf is better than no loaf
at
all.
Dan,
to make the point, briefly, if you look at any of the big, heavy stuff that took place during the 20th century, in the First World War, the Second World War, in Korea, in Vietnam, when France folded there, when Afghanistan, when Russia folded, it was always America that came into it, whatever about the outcome of it. And if America comes out of this, Greg, it becomes a totally different ballgame. And I think the rules of engagement are going to be very, very different here.
All right. So, I mean, Dennis, what do you think? I mean, you know, if Russia gets Crimea, maybe they go into Poland and sit in a block of land there for 10 years and take it next, or wherever it might be. I know we're somewhat removed from it, but what do you believe that the Ukrainians perhaps will have to agree to give up some of their land, recognize Russian presence in Crimea to end this war?
You know, we know history shows us, like, you know, in any war, there has to be compromises. So we can kid ourselves and say, listen, Zelensky can say, you know, no, I'm not going to give up Crimea. But to what end, like, until the last drop of Ukrainian blood? You know, it's not sustainable what's going on there. You know, the reality is, like, it's you know, it's a proxy war, like, you know. The Americans and the Europeans are shifting arms and arms into Ukraine, like. And there's no word about the average Ukrainian going to the front line. It's just, it's not sustainable. You cannot do it, like, whether we like it. And you can argue the rights and wrongs about Russia coming in and claiming land, but you could also go back and ask yourself, like, the question about NATO not moving one inch eastwards, you know. So it is what it is right now. So if I was Zelensky, I would be trying to get it stopped today, you know.
Okay, India, briefly to you, if you don't mind. Thanks very much.
Well, I think that the most important thing to point out is that the US is the main supplier of ammunition. Like, they supply 45% of the ammunition to the war in Ukraine. And I think that if they're going to pull out, that Zelensky should counterattack by saying, right, we're not going to buy any ammunition. I think if the US pulled out completely, not just Donald Trump and the government, if the whole US stopped supplying any kind of ammunition towards any war, we'd be in a completely different situation. I don't think this is going to be won on the front lines, no matter how many times you avoid, you know, no matter how many attacks happen. It's innocent civilians that are being affected by this, and it's not them that's going to get peace. It's going to be President Trump, Vladimir Zelensky, and Putin sitting down at a table, because this war could go on for 1 year, could go on for 10 years, and nothing's going to be achieved by fighting and going against each other. The only way to solve this is if NATO pulls back on their stance, remains neutral, and all sides come together and sit down and make agreements to stop the fighting, because it's the innocent, like in every war, it's the innocent civilians that are being most affected by this.
India, thank you very much for joining us. It's been lovely having you on the show. Maybe you'll come back again.
100%. Thanks
Super
for having
stuff.
Me.
That'll do me. Fantastic. Take care, India. Councillor McGee, thank you very much indeed. We'll talk again, no doubt.
100% redress. I'll be back. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, get it in there. We're sure we're always talking about it. Good man. Take care of yourself. And Paddy Rooney, thank you so very much indeed. Everyone You're always welcome. Enjoys Great. Your thank views you. As I do myself. Take care of yourself.
You.
Okay. We'll be back with much more in the 9 till noon show after a break for the news and obituary notices.